So we're going to continue. I was thinking this evening we'll discuss something about Lord Balaram, some lila that the kids can participate in, at least hopefully. We're now going to cover texts 13 through 16 in chapter 5. These verses are the conclusion of Adura's questions, at least this part of the chapter. And then next time it's Maitreya responds. And in this section, text 13 and 14, Vidura is continuing to glorify Krishna Katha. Then he asks for some benediction from Maitreya, benediction for himself. He likens himself to a honeybee. He wants the honey of the nectar of Krishna's topics. He's also wanting that mercy go to others. And he ends up with a very explicit, conclusive request that's requesting describe the activities of that superhuman being, the Supreme Lord Krishna. So text 13. For one who is anxious to engage constantly in hearing about such topics, Krishna Katha gradually increases his indifference towards all other things. Have you heard that spoken before? Some other places? Bhakti parishano bhavo viraktir anyatra cha. You've heard that verse before? There are symptoms of one who is engaged in the process of hearing and chanting that's done properly. And there are three symptoms that are mentioned. Bhakti, wanting to serve the Supreme Lord in practical devotional service. Paraisha Anubhav, feelings towards the Supreme Controller. And Viraktir, detachment from all other things. Viraktir Anyatra Cha. The comparison is given to the process of eating. When somebody has been fasting for some period of time, the body becomes a little weak and hunger starts to grow and so forth. So after some period of fasting, when the eating process begins, there's three symptoms. The hunger subsides, strength is returning to the body, and one feels satisfaction. At a certain point, you tell the person that's offering you, would you like some more of this or some more of that? You say, no, thank you. I'm full. I'm fully satisfied. So, as with the eating process, when one has been fasting, so similarly, one who's been in this material world and is depleted due to lack of spiritual contact, just by the process of hearing, a desire to serve Krishna awakens. Feelings for the Supreme Person become strong within the heart, and a detachment from other things. So, Vidura is saying the same thing. By this hearing of Krishna Katha, previously he described the attachment to material affairs, particularly mundane aspects of family life, one becomes detached from. Here is specifically indifference to all other things. And in the purport specifically, it's discussing dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. It's just like at the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita chapter 18. Sarva dharmam parityaja, mame kam sharanam vraja. Because the purpose of, the material purpose of dharma is elevation and sense gratification. By performing prescribed religious duties, one gains punya. You gain some merit. And with that merit, then you prosper economically. At least that's the formula. Artha. And what's the purpose of the economic prosperity? Sense enjoyment. Kama. Dharma, artha. Higher grades, but still the principle is there. Like Prabhupada describes, whether the hog is eating stool or we're eating something on a silver plate. Eating process is universal. So one may think this is advancement of civilization because I'm sleeping on the bed and the dog is sleeping on the floor. But the sleeping activity is the same activity. So it's a polished animal civilization only that sees doing the same things that are the lower propensities in a sophisticated fashion. It's the same. Consciousness-wise or spiritual evolution-wise. And so the real merit of human form of life is spiritual elevation. And with spiritual elevation, detachment from those attractions for mundane urges for sense gratification, they subside. Such constant remembrance of the lotus feet of the Lord Krishna by the devotee who has achieved transcendental bliss vanquishes all his miseries without delay. A similar idea is in Nectar of Devotion. Those of you that are a little familiar with Nectar of Devotion, first chapter of Nectar of Devotion is called Characteristics of Pure Devotional Service. And there, the first two of those six characteristics of devotional service correspond with sadhana, bhakti, not up to the stage of spiritual perfection, but even in the practicing stage, one can experience these symptoms. Klesha means sufferings. Kleshagni, and so the diminishing of the sufferings that's simply due to involvement with matter, that subsides, and the shubha dha, the awakening or the ushering in of auspiciousness in one's life, that comes from devotional practice, starting with hearing and chanting. And it happens at once, without delay. Ashu. So in the purport, Prabhupada is discussing that the transcendental nature of Krishna Katha itself, just as the outcome brings one to the transcendental position, the vehicle that takes you there is transcendental. The sound vibrations of Krishna Katha are non-different than Krishna, so just by contacting them, by allowing them to enter the holes of one's ear submissively, then that spiritual elevation takes place in a natural way. So it's recommended. Gather people together and have them hear Krishna Katha. Have them hear Kirtan. Have them hear that which will cleanse their heart. Even if they're not fully understanding, still the spiritual benefit is there. Just like the trees and the plants, or the child within the womb, or a living entity that doesn't have advanced faculty of cognition. Spiritual benefit is going, nonetheless, just by the process of hearing. The purport ends, "Only the devotee by his factual experience can understand the import of this verse spoken by Vidura. The pure devotee of the Lord enjoys life by constantly remembering the lotus feet of the Lord, by hearing Krishna Katha. For such a devotee, there is no such thing as material existence, and the much advertised bliss of Brahmananda is like a fig for the devotee who is in the midst of the transcendental ocean of bliss." Then he speaks about those that don't receive that benefit, even when hearing. That's an important consideration. If the Krishna Katha is so wonderful, why isn't it we just like broadcast Krishna Katha and everyone should become a devotee? So Vidura says, "O sage, persons who, because of their sinful activities, are averse to the topics of transcendence, and thus ignorant of the purpose of the Mahabharata, or Bhagavad Gita, are pitied by the pitiable. I also pity them because I see how their duration of life is spoiled by eternal time, while they involve themselves in presentations of philosophical speculation, theoretical, ultimate goals of life, and different modes of ritual." Dharma, artha, kama. It's just not being able to see beyond the temporal, in part just because of being obsessed with the temporal, and not wanting to look beyond it, finding that that's all there is, and anything outside of that is imagination, or, you know, foolish. And in the name of scholarship, persons who become studiers of the Vedas, what to speak of mundane topics, those who are scholars of the Vedas come to the same conclusion. Many. Prabhupada would refer to again and again and again this Professor Katovsky, but his position was he was the head of a department, the Indology department of Moscow University. Moscow University is like, you know, it's like an Ivy League college in America, you know, Harvard or Princeton or Yale University. And between Russia and India, there was always a very strong relation. I mean, historically, going back in ancient times, or so even in modern times, this Professor Katovsky was a scholar of Indian literature. And his conclusion was, Swamiji, after the body is finished, everything is finished. Scholar, in the name of scholarship. So what to speak of ordinary people? That's like, you know, the top ranking professor of the topmost university in this department that studies these literatures. What about the rest of the people? Poor people. I want to read, received some kindness from Bhanu Swami. He gave me, he's translated the commentaries of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur for the entire 10th canto Srimad Bhagavatam. And, you know, just the 10th canto commentary is this thick. So, you know, for a sannyasi that travels, you can't carry around so many books. One of the advantages of having computers to access that wonderful resource, so he gave me an electronic version, which I promised I would not give to anybody else. So don't ask me for it. But you can buy his books. They're available. So here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on this verse. Very nice. The translation is a little different. It reads, I lament for the most lamentable, ignorant people who are opposed to the topics of the Lord because of offenses. Time destroys the life of those who are so absorbed in useless words, actions, and mind. Commentary. There are three types of people related to the topics of the Lord. Those with faith, those with no faith, and those who are opposed. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, those are called faithful who have conviction that bhakti is the highest process and goal, since it is mentioned in many verses. And he gives just a couple of them. These are from Uddhava Gita, Krishna speaking to Uddhava. The translation reads, as long as one does not become detached from daily and periodic duties, or has not awakened his faith in hearing topics about me, one must perform one's prescribed duties of varnashram. So, the two verses previous is Vidura speaking, I want to hear from you, Maitreya, about the duties of mankind. But I've already heard the duties of mankind from Vyasadeva as he's presented them. And I'm quite satiated by hearing all those. I want to hear how they can be elevating one to the point of connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead by connecting them as directly as possible with Krishna Katha. So, stated in reverse, it's if one has not developed an attraction for the topics of the Personality of Godhead, then certainly he must engage in varnashram duties. So you can say it the other way around. One who has developed attraction for the Personality of Godhead and topics related to him doesn't have the same obligation to the worldly duties of society. That is to say, if there's some negligence, there's a nice verse written by Jamunacharya where he speaks like this, well, please forgive me for negligence in this duty, that due to the other duty. I'm completely satisfied in my service to the Personality of Godhead. And then he says, let the religionists call me mad, and let the mammonists call me a fool, and let people call me whatever bad names they want. I simply want the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead. So it's not that the person who is engaged in Krishna Katha becomes neglectful in ordinary dealings. It's one of the teachings that Srila Prabhupada gave us, is that a Vaishnava is not negligent in ordinary dealings. Now that I'm a devotee, I don't neglect my family or neglect going to work or neglect my worldly responsibilities. I do those things in Krishna consciousness. But if there's where there's a question of prioritizing one's life, the priority goes to my direct activities of bhakti. I don't sacrifice my direct activities of bhakti in order to climb the totem pole or something like that. You know, I'll do what I need to do in order to do my duties in a responsible manner. I'm not attached to the prosperity or the material enjoyments or the whatever it is. But I'm not neglectful in my duty because I'm doing them in a responsible manner for Krishna. So, here's another, also from, this is from 11th Canto, chapter 20. Bhagavatam. Having developed faith in topics about me, Krishna speaking to Uddhava, and being disgusted with all karmas, he knows that all enjoyments are filled with misery. But he is unable to give them up. Still, with affection for me, this is at the immature stage, still, with affection for me, with faith and determination, he will continue worshiping me, at the same time, partaking of those enjoyments which give rise to suffering, and condemning them. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is describing, this is this intermediate stage. There is the, where faith is fully mature and complete. There's the in-between stage where there's weak faith or insufficient faith. So some faith enough to hear, but not sufficient faith to be situated in a state of complete detachment in consciousness. So one continues to engage in those activities that give rise to suffering, while ultimately having faith in shelter in Krishna. Vishwanath goes on, such persons have faith that bhakti is the only process for achieving the highest spiritual goal. Those who desire to achieve artha, dharma, kama, and moksha without bhakti are the opposers. The faithful are described with joy, the unfaithful are omitted, and the opposers are lamented. So that is to say, Vidura is speaking about the faithful and appreciating their very fortunate position. He's feeling pity or great compassion, lamenting over the condition of those who are opposed. And he just doesn't address those that are in that intermediate stage. Hopefully, by cultivation, those are in an intermediate stage become gradually faithful. The pure devotees lament for those engaged in practices for svarga or liberation. And they lament for those practicing karma, jnana, and yoga without bhakti. The cause is their ignorance. Though they may study the scriptures, they do not understand the final meaning. They oppose the Lord's topics because of great offenses, aghena, either recent or ancient. Animisha means time. To establish their opinions, they boldly show off their words, actions, and minds. This is criticized as useless. Times change, so as through changing of time, the form of things change, but the essences don't change. This is the time of Krishna's departure. It's 5,000 years ago, and there are such people on the planet at the time of Vidura, and he's lamenting for them, and they're also present today. The lifestyle that persons lead is different, where they choose to live and how they move about and so on, how they dress themselves, their speech is different, but the principle is the same. And it's a lamentable condition. So he's offering his concern. He's not like just ignoring them. He's offering concerns. He's wishing their well-being, in other words. How unfortunate. Just like we heard earlier from Uddhava's position, Uddhava's position was he was feeling pain because of their ignorance, and here Vidura's feeling great pity or lamenting or well-wishing upon them. Because the things that you have to be attached to something. And so you're attached to something temporary, then the fruit is going to be temporary. Your position is going to be very unstable. And when that instability manifests and the whole thing falls apart, there's great lamentation and calamity. But it's just part of the foolishness of being in that position to begin with. Because of not knowing any better. Not really having the alternative, having no real shelter, one takes a false shelter. And that's the circumstance. Knowing that persons have such false shelter, a person that knows what actual shelter is, feels pain. How unfortunate. And where is that understanding in the world? Even, you know, going through this, even for persons who have, quote, religious life, what is it that they're taking shelter of that is religious, and what's their sense of what the goal is? Very shallow. People don't ask the question. They just go along with life. I'll little anecdote. One of Prabhupada's disciples that many of you probably don't know is Rupanuga Prabhu. Rupanuga Prabhu was a social worker in New York City, and he and Sesrup Maharaj, through their social work, they were the ones that were largely maintaining the initial 26 Second Avenue operation. And at a certain point in time, there was a gentleman from upstate New York who was coming regularly to visit Srila Prabhupada's 26 Second Avenue programs, classes. And he very much appreciated Prabhupada's work and said that he would pay for someone to be situated near the university, State University of New York in Buffalo, if they would run a center there and help the college students hear Prabhupada, the same teachings that Prabhupada was giving. So Prabhupada immediately accepted, and he requested Rupanuga to go. And that's where I came in contact with Krishna consciousness. I was a student at that university, along with maybe 20, 25 other devotees that became devotees. Well, here's a list of some of the people who came from that program. Bhurijan, Bhagavan, and his wife, forget Krishna something, Lakshmi Moni and Jagadish, Bibi Govinda Maharaj, Trivikram Maharaj, Gunagrai Maharaj, Prahladananda Maharaj, my little self, Tejas, who you don't know maybe because he joined, he was the president for a while, and then Prabhupada, he went to India and served in India for a long time. First president of the Delhi temple. And his wife. And I'm sure a host of other people that I'm not thinking of. It was a very, very productive center. And you know, the time was right, and so many things were right about the circumstance. Narottamananda is another. He became the head pujari in Juhu Temple for years together, but anyway, a number of devotees from that program. And then after some time, Rupanuga became the temple president in New York. So I was the temple commander, along with Rupanuga being the temple president. One of the things that he liked to do was to go to college programs. So he had somebody setting up the classes, and then he would go and give the class. And he had a very interesting approach. He used his uniqueness of appearance to its full advantage. He was naturally bald, looked like Yul Brynner. If that name means anything to you. Like, you know, he looked like an actor, like a, you know, a celebrity. So when he came in, he dressed very formally, and he went through like a 5-minute silent ritual, and everyone was watching him to see what he was going to do. He had a, you know, picture of Krishna, then a little picture of Prabhupada, and set up a little mat, and, you know, very ceremoniously lit a stick of incense, rang a little tiny bell. He's sitting there very straight, like, you know, like a yogi, ringing his bell, offering the incense to Krishna and Prabhupada, and put the incense in the incense holder. Sat very straight, taught them the Maha Mantra, and after they chanted the Maha Mantra a little together, you know, in unison with him, so he began his class in the following way. So after that little introduction, everyone's wondering, what's this man going to do next? And his first question was, he started with a question. He said, what's the highest truth that you know? That's where he began. What's the highest truth that you know? Persons go, you know, I don't want to say anything to this guy because who knows, he'll shoot me down. But that's where he started. And, you know, if people, if they were, generally it was someone that would say something. But he would take that something and then hold it up to the light of Vedic wisdom and show the highest truth that you know, where that fits in the tree of Vedic wisdom. It was a far-out approach. I mean, by the time he was speaking, he had everyone, he had a captive audience. Maybe some people felt uncomfortable, but they were fully absorbed in whatever it was that was going to come out of his mouth. So, state the highest truth that you know. What is that? And if people just like blank, then, you know, what does that say? Because how many people even think about, what's the highest truth I know? Whoever even asked themselves that question. You know, it's like, you know, why do I exist? You know, it's those fundamental questions. What's the real purpose of life? What's the highest truth you know? So not having a real, having given any thought to that, even if persons are engaged in religious activity, what's the purpose behind it? What's to be attained by that? Well, people don't give thought to that. They may say, well, it's for God. But even what does that mean? That, drill down a little bit on that one, and what do you get? I don't know. Or something very, very vague. So, Vidura is lamenting over that condition and wishing that it would be different. Offering benedictions, offering his well wishes unto those who are under that condition. And wanting Maitreya to give him and in turn to give others that Krishna Katha that makes that, that is the essence. And it's both the means and the end. So then there's this very nice companion verse, Matirna Krishne Paratak Svatova. You've heard that verse before. It's spoken by Prahlad Maharaj to his father, Hiranyakashipu. And the circumstance is, Hiranyakashipu had entrusted his son, or actually sons, he had more than one son, entrusted his sons to the teachers, the sons of Shukracharya, is the priest of the demon, the daityas, and his sons were Sunda and Amarka. So Sunda and Amarka were in charge of teaching Prahlad. And he was busy, you know, doing his Hiranyakashipu thing, but periodically he would invite his son to come to the royal chamber and with tears in his eyes, put his son on his lap and ask his son to tell him the nicest thing that he's learned in school. And this is Prahlad Maharaj's response. My dear demoniac father, don't worry. You will not become fixed in knowledge of this personality of Godhead, because it's not possible for one who is too much absorbed in the bodily concept of life. Matir na Krishne paratakshvatova matobhi badyeta grahak vatanam griha vrata. One is very, very attached, strongly attached to material pleasure in family life. Such a person will never develop a strong attraction for Krishna or topics related to Krishna. This is the lamentable condition. Adanta gobir vishatam tamishram punash punak charvata charvananam. They're too busy in the affairs of sense gratification, chewing the chewed, the happiness of material life, as Prabhupada is saying here, or as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur saying, is actually the source of misery. But the same thing Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Yehi samsparsha ja bhoga dukkha yonaya evate. Krishna's statement in Bhagavad Gita. One who sees happiness, bhoga, enjoyment, coming from senses, coming in contact with sense objects, that's everybody. Whether it's an insect or a dog or a bird or a human being or a monkey or a whatever. Sense object, there's the senses, some attraction to try to become the enjoyer of that. So it looks like happiness, but lo and behold, it's misery. Dukkha yonaya evate. Krishna sees it. Vidura sees it. A Vaishnav that's properly situated sees it, and one that's not doesn't see it. That very same thing that causes grief, pain, and suffering is looked upon as an opportunity for enjoyment. And people go after it and suffer and do it again and again and again and again. Not only in, you know, in this lifetime, lifetime after lifetime. You know, in 1 hour's time, they'll do it again and again and again. And continue to do it again and again and again. The deluding potency is so strong. So it's lamentable for a transcendentalist. So he concludes this section by, O Maitreya, O friend of the distressed, the glories of the Supreme Lord can alone do good for people all over the world. Therefore, just as bees collect honey from flowers, kindly describe the essence of all topics, the topics of the Supreme Lord. So he's asking again for his benefit, because a devotee is not simply self-interested. He's asking for the benefit of others. As we receive this message of Krishna consciousness, it's natural, it's appropriate, it's responsible. You see that others get an opportunity also to hear. Kindly chant all of those superhuman transcendental activities of the Supreme Controller of the Personality of Godhead, who accepted incarnations fully equipped with all potency for the full manifestation and maintenance of the cosmic creation. This is his last verse before Shukadev Goswami now goes over to what Maitreya says in response. Prabhupada writes that Vidura was undoubtedly very eager to hear about Lord Krishna in particular, but he was overwhelmed because Lord Krishna had just passed away from the visible world. He therefore wanted to hear about him in his Purusha incarnations, which he manifests with full potencies for the creation and maintenance of the cosmic world. Specifically, it's going to begin in discussing the topics of creation because he's asked about the Purusha avatars. The Purusha avatars, there are six categories of avatars. And does anybody know what those six are? Does anybody know one of them? Lila avatars? Guna avatars? Shakyavesha avatars? Yuga avatar? Manvantar avatar? And Purusha avatar. So the Purusha avatars are the forms of Lord Vishnu for the purpose of creation. That is to say, there's not a Garbhadakshay Vishnu, or there's not a super soul within the heart of every living being in the spiritual world. Do you know that? Paramatma is one of the Purusha avatars. He manifests within the heart of every living entity, and for that matter, within the heart of, within every atom of creation. But when the living entities are in the spiritual realm, there's no Paramatma within, because Krishna is visible without. But when they turn their attention away from Krishna, who's present before them, out of his compassion, he hides himself to stay as their dearmost friend. He hides himself within their heart as Paramatma. So the Lord of the heart is the same as Krishna in the spiritual world. Or Krishna in the spiritual world expands himself as Paramatma within. So the Purusha avatars are specific, what he's asking about, and they're in relation to the creation. So he's alluding to the Lord of creation, the material creation. Because he's feeling so much separation, Krishna, original personality of Godhead, was present, and he just left. And his dearmost devotee, Uddhava, was three chapters long describing his feelings of separation. So that's churned very much in the heart of Maitreya. He wants to hear about the Purusha avatars, that manifestation of the Lord within creation, to minimize his own pain of suffering, to enliven him again in his natural state of Krishna consciousness, and also to provide this benefit, this light, in the darkened hearts and lives of those persons who are so unfortunate that they're averse. But describing these glories will be of benefit even for those persons. So the next thing we're going to hear, this is coming attractions. Shukadev Goswami is narrating this, so he's going to summarize what Maitreya just said, what Vidura just said, and then he's going to narrate how did Maitreya respond. And Maitreya is going to very much appreciate the mood of Vidura, respectfulness, the enthusiasm to hear, and the nature of his questions, and he's very enlivened that he begins speaking, giving starting with very broad descriptions about the relationship of the Lord and his creation, and he starts to go into detail. Bearing in mind Vidura's request, please keep all these topics with very strong focus on Krishna, Krishna Katha. He's not just interested in technology, he's interested in Krishna Katha. But this is also, as part of Krishna's concern, to provide living entities with an opportunity to act upon their desire, but to more to track them again to him. So he wants to have that happen. And he sees Maitreya as the best person to do that. Okay. Any questions or discussion on this? Yes?
Well, as we hear again and again that material enjoyment is temporary and it's not fulfilling, but then we still remain attached to it. And while practicing Krishna consciousness, that's an impediment. And we hear that when we become, we have attraction or attachment to the, or we have enjoy in Krishna consciousness, then that tendency for material enjoyment will go away. So, so I'm trying to understand how we can increase our happiness in Krishna consciousness so that these tendencies can go away.
Well, the happiness in Krishna consciousness is the happiness of service. Happiness of service means that another be pleased by my service. And that's my happiness. That's a greater happiness. So that the how to increase the happiness in Krishna consciousness is to see service not as an instrument to get my happiness, but as an instrument to please another. That's service. And that's a greater happiness. And when that greater happiness is there, the lesser happiness pales. In the presence of the midday sun, what does the light of a glowworm or a firefly do? Insignificant. You don't even notice it. At night, when there's no light, oh, look at that glowworm. Look at that firefly. Probably around here in Michigan, the climate is very similar to when I grew up as a small boy. I was in upstate New York. So, you know, where there's lakes, there's fireflies. So at night, you know, there's these fireflies zooming around and the kids get there, you know, they want to, ooh, and get a jar and capture some firefly in the jar. But during the daytime, it's just a little bug in a jar. Nothing at all. Poor guy stuck and he'll wait till it gets dark again. Oh, and there's a firefly in the jar. I remember visiting Villa Vrindavan in Italy once. We were given a tour of the property. And we started, you know, in the afternoon. By the evening time, we were way down the bottom of a hill and so on. So as we were walking back up, there were these thousands, or at least hundreds, hundreds and hundreds of fireflies zooming around. And it was, I mean, I wonder how they didn't crash into each other. There's so many of them. No radar control towers saying, okay, you know, turn left, watch out. Just flying around. And I was thinking, that's fascinating. But, you know, if it was daylight, wouldn't even notice it. And then similarly, the happiness of sense gratification, you don't even, doesn't mean anything. It's insignificant to one who's experiencing the happiness of Krishna consciousness. It's not a matter of austere renunciation or something. It's just insignificant. Insignificant. So for the devotee to move through the world who is feeling the joy of Krishna consciousness and not be attracted to sense gratification. Materialists can't understand where we're coming from. So, but your question specifically was how to increase the joy or the happiness of Krishna consciousness. It's a mood of service. It's like, you know, when two people love one another, that their happiness that they're experiencing is the joy of serving one another. And, you know, that, you know, why are they so happy all the time? It's very attractive, but, you know, who has it? It's persons that understand the significance of serving one another. And not just like serving their senses, but serving the soul. Serving on a higher platform, seeing beyond the material conception of life. And serving on that platform because Krishna is at the center. And that's happiness. That's divine happiness that doesn't fall prey to sense gratification. That's just insignificant. Anything else? Yes?
Thank you for that.
Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, my question is regarding service. If we are doing service and we are thinking this service is for my own purification.
That's fine.
But also like if I'm thinking, if I do this service, this will help me in spiritual progress, my own spiritual progress. So is that the same as...
Well, it's mode of goodness. It's not fully transcendental, but it's mode of goodness. That's how in this third canto of the Bhagavatam, Devahuti asks Karna Mumuni, devotional service is pure. But is it possible that devotional service, which is pure, can be mixed with the modes of nature? And Kapila Dev says yes. There's devotional service tinged with ignorance, tinged with passion, tinged with goodness. And then there's symptoms of pure, unalloyed devotional service. So devotional service in goodness, devotional service in goodness is where one is thinking, I must do this, it is my duty, or it will purify my existence. That's devotional service in the quality of goodness. And that's fine. We do things because they are to be done. It's a beginning. I mean, it's a good beginning. And we don't deviate because it's to be done. So it doesn't matter whether I feel like this or I feel like that. It's to be done. It will purify me. It will help me advance in Krishna consciousness. And if I, so the higher is, if I advance in Krishna consciousness, then I'll be able to please Krishna more. That's what I want, to please Krishna more. There's the tinge of the passion says that I'll get more if I advance further in Krishna consciousness. Or my miseries will diminish if I advance in Krishna consciousness. Or something like that. Something that's fruitive in motivation. But if I, you know, to advance in Krishna consciousness is not per se fruitive. It's our real self-interest. Anything else? Yes?
I'm curious as to what factors determine a person's initial reception to Krishna Katha, like I know that katha is inherently attractive in itself, yet, yeah. Like for someone myself, I was instantly attracted. Yet for the others I have met seem to run the other way as fast as they can. Is it like previous association or Krishna's descending mercy? Or what other factors?
Well, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes exactly what you just mentioned. That there's a divine nature and a demoniac nature. The divine nature is attracted and the demoniac flees here and there. That's Krishna's words. So the aversion to Krishna is what brings us to the material world, and how strongly we are averse to Krishna is the factor. I remember Bhakti Chaitanya Swami describing his first coming in contact in devotee association, and anybody that knows him, he's like a perfect gentleman and very gentle in his manner, and he's just like an ideal person. So he was working in London, and the Harinam was going along whatever the street was in downtown London. So it was near his place of work. So when he saw the devotees coming down the street, if they were on this side, he crossed the street and went on that side. If they're coming on that side, he crossed the street and went on the opposite side. Just to, you know, avoid that experience. That was initially. But he didn't know, he said, that, you know, how the even across the street the hearing of the holy name was affecting him. I wasn't that averse. But, you know, the attachment to sense gratification anchors the aversion or strengthens the aversion tendency. The influence of ignorance, how strong that influence is. Like a child, you know, holding on to something that it's dangerous. You try to take that something out of the child's hand. Scream, scream, scream. And in 3 minutes later, they drop it. Or sooner. Just, you know, selfish attachment, foolish attachment, just no good reason at all. Attachment. It comes down to our regard for Krishna. And ignorance is to turn our attention away from Krishna, to ignore him. That's the root of our ignorance. Our willingness to turn our attention again to Krishna, that's a good fortune. Anything else? Yes?
Maharaj, I had two questions, Maharaj. Maharaj, one is, you mentioned that when the soul goes back to the spiritual world, the Paramatma is not there. So does the Paramatma get merged in or gets into the Mahavishnu? Or what happens to the Paramatma aspect?
Paramatma is a manifestation, expansion of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, who is an expansion of Mahavishnu. So if one soul gets liberated, there's no loss. that form, I guess you can say, is amalgamated within, because it's an expansion of Mahavishnu. What else?
Every time when you come, you share with us the experiences, like your initial days and all the other spiritual masters, how they struggled and they preached Krishna consciousness. Nowadays, as grihasthas, we do have the enthusiasm to do, but we don't have the time. Sometimes I feel what we are doing is more like part-time. You know, we practice Krishna consciousness, but that's good for us. As a congregation, one, and as personally, what contribution can we give to the society?
It's an individual matter. You know, the wish to do so is the most important thing. Upon receiving, it's a natural thing. It's a sign of maturity to want to give back. I've received something, I want to give in appreciation for what I have received. And when there's a desire to reciprocate in that way, the means will come. The bigger problem is commitment, or let's say hovering on a mental platform, thinking good thoughts but not doing anything. And when there's commitment, then all kinds of, you know, I don't have time shows that there's time. And when we say we don't have time, we definitely don't have time. It's the internal potency. Prabhupada describes this in Ishupanishad. The internal potency of the Lord works in such a way that when we have a desire to serve Krishna, the internal potency provides the means and the opportunity to serve Krishna. And the external potency works in such a way that if we don't have that desire to serve Krishna, the external energy will keep us so busy we don't have time. It's the same energy working in two different ways, the internal energy, external energy. So it's how we regard our service position to Krishna and to those dear to Krishna. The opportunity is there. Just depending upon which of the internal or the external energy we're working under. And the best way to do that service is something that you can sustain. You know, it's according to nature and circumstance. Right, some persons are really help with the festivals when they come. Somebody can distribute books. Somebody can help keep track of the accounting. Someone, you know, depending upon propensity, do something that's going to contribute to the mission. And discuss, if you're not too sure, you know, what your personal best way. Consult with those devotees that you work closely with, and they'll help guide you. Try to do something that you can sustain, because it's discouraging for an individual to stop, start, or wishful thinking that never happens. So something that's practical that you can sustain. Yeah. It starts there. And then the commitment, okay, at least I'll do something. It's like somebody beginning to chant. Okay, I appreciate chanting is valuable. I hear so much about it. I guess I should chant. And then one can still think about, I guess I should chant for like a long time. Then finally, okay, commitment, I'm going to chant. And it can be, you know, one round or whatever it is. But just the commitment to do so, and it'll grow. So something. And the commitment to do so. A desire. And the commitment to do so. Something that you can sustain. Anything else? Okay. Yes. Yes. Jamunacharya, yeah.
He said, forgive me for the negligence of duty.
Yes.
He also said, we should not be negligent in our duty. And he said that the priority should be to direct activities of our life. So, what should we do in a situation when there is a clash, like when we have a duty to be taken care of, at the same time, we have, like, for temple service? Or something like, is taking care of family and most things are also direct activities of bhakti, or how do we understand what is directly like a direct activity of bhakti and what is not?
Well, the last part of your question kind of took a different turn. The first part is priority, and priority. Charity begins at home. So, all kinds of expanding outreach stuff and neglecting family at home, that's not good. Now, the other is also not wholesome. I just concerned about family and, you know, that the rest, whatever happens, happens. So something, let me do something while I'm looking into that which I can sustain. Let me do something in the giving back that which I've received while I'm looking after and maintaining properly upholding the standard of Krishna consciousness within the family. As congregation members, that it's not exactly, I hear the word balance, it's not exactly balance, it's a priority. But when there's a will, usually there's a way. You know, let's say I'm a householder and over here is another householder couple and we're talking, you know, we'd like to do something. Okay, I'll help you this way. You can help me that way and we'll both be able to do something because, you know, we're cooperating together. Oh, that's great. For example, with watching the children or doing some cooking or sharing some chores or, you know, I'll do some shopping and you do some this thing and that. Anyway, because we want to increase our preaching, but we don't want to neglect at home. So, for example, when there's a will, there generally is a way without being neglectful. Prabhupada writes in Bhagavad Gita, the last part of what you said, what's the principle of bhakti? The principle of bhakti, one of the principles of bhakti that Prabhupada describes directly in the purport in Bhagavad Gita is, one of the best ways to fix the mind upon Krishna is to always be considering the ways and means by which Krishna consciousness can be expanded. You recall reading that in Bhagavad Gita? It's there in Bhagavad Gita. Even if you don't do it. So we don't just, oh, I don't have to do it. I just have to, like, think about doing it. Not what's written. But I wish very strongly. And when you wish very strongly, Krishna will help fulfill that wish without being negligent. Because both are important, this and that. So it's not exactly a balance. It's a priority. But giving Krishna conscious opportunity to others is also going to help my Krishna consciousness and help the world in which I live, which is impacting upon my family. This little unit over here is based upon what's going on out there. And it sets a standard for our family, our children. This is what we do as devotees. So it's part of being a responsible parent. Show by example. We do these things. And there's a way. It's not neglecting, but it's connecting with the mission. If it's done thoughtfully, conscientiously, with the proper priority. And, you know, just as our chanting from day to day may go up and down, our capacity may also become stronger and diminished over a period of, you know, time. So, we have to allow for that. Not be rigid and inflexible, but at the same time, be very, you know, determined in our purpose. If we have healthy, wholesome, Krishna-conscious families to bring people that we meet into the association of, that's going to be a very strong message. And if we have dysfunctional, you know, obviously, you know, strained family situations to bring people into, that's not going to be very productive. So, all outreach and not inattentive to the priority isn't good. Only doing one minus the other is also not what our duties as strong grihasthas should be. We should be showing our children and others by example, this is what we do. Okay. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.